Good morning. Today is Monday, May the 3rd.
If you say so,
just let that resonate with you for a sec. May. All right. Joining us this morning is Eureka Police Chief, Mr. Steve Watson. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Are you ready for your why do we say that or why do we do that or ever wonder why question? Your question this morning.
My question, not your
question. Your
question
this morning. Yes. Let's see. No. Okay. Ever wonder why someone in a precarious situation, or let me restate it. Why does someone in a precarious situation said to be between the devil and the deep blue sea?
Really, I wish you went with the one above that because I cheated while you were out of the room and read it. And I was prepared to answer.
All right, smart guy.
Pay.
We'll hold that one from Macaulay tomorrow. Okay. When something goes wrong, why do we say there's the devil to pay?
Well, if I recall from my reading, it has to do with wooden ships and a very difficult to reach seam that is below the waterline. And when you pay that devil's seam, you have to use some kind of caulking material that's water resistant, like hot pitch. And the challenge is you have to run the boat ashore.
Just read the darn thing. I mean, as long as you read it, you may as well read it out loud and get it smoothly.
I'm sure the author is a little more articulate about explaining it than
so
I am.
So am I.
Right. All right. So when something goes wrong, we say there'll be the devil to pay. The devil in this expression is not Satan, and to pay has nothing to do with the usual definition of the term. The devil is a seam on a wooden ship that is usually below the waterline and hard to reach. To pay means to caulk the seam with water-resistant preparation like hot pitch. In order to get to the seam, a ship often had to be careened on a shallow bottom. When the tide went out, the work could be done, but it had to be done quickly before the tide came back in. I can see how that could be a problem.
Yeah.
If the ship were made ready, but the crew had not prepared the hot pitch, then they had the devil to pay and no pitch hot.
All right, next time we're coming from the back of the book for you.
Almost got away with it.
Almost.
Was it
almost.
For that pesky Brian.
Yes. Oh, jeez. Are we having, you just heard the news story about a pedestrian being hit by a vehicle or contacted by or run, I don't what the right term is. I don't. That's okay. Do we have a lot of those in our area?
Yes, is a short answer.
Is it just the Broadway corridor, so the 4th and 5th, so the stereotypes that we think of, is that the triggering cause, or is there a bunch of other issues at work here also?
Well, there's a few other locations that can tend to be more problematic, but certainly the Broadway 101 corridor through the city seems to be where we have the greatest number of problems. You know, it's Highway 101, 2-3 lanes, and a lot of vehicular traffic, pedestrian traffic.
Yeah. Do you think the stuff that Caltrans is talking about with the crosswalks is going to alleviate that, or is it just going to be more money spent and you're still going to be having the issues?
Well, obviously, we're not going to know for sure until the work is done.
So we'll put an asterisk at the end of your comment. Yeah.
The hope is that it will help reduce. Certainly, I don't believe would eliminate the problem because there's just so many causal factors, and you can never forget the human factor, obviously, in all of this, starting with the drivers, but also certainly there's pedestrian factors as well that have tended to have common themes.
When pedestrian is used as a phrase, does that include the bicycles that go shooting out and whipping around all over?
I think for purposes of this conversation, we could include that.
But statistically, do you have to track those as bicycle accidents?
You know, I don't know that we track them specifically by person on foot or person on people-powered pedal machines.
Skateboards,
yeah,
scooters.
Yeah, it's a vehicle bikes, versus, yeah. You know, a person that's not in a motorized vehicle.
Well, that would include all the parachuters also that land in the middle of the highway.
Yeah, that one doesn't happen very often. Yeah. Now that I said that, I'll probably read it
out today. Oh. So when you see this stuff and you look at these numbers, is this anything that cops can have any kind of influence on, or is this more Public Works or Caltrans and just people being either self-focused, unintelligent, uneducated, stupid, pick a phrase. It doesn't, you know, they're all.
Well, there's a lot of distracted driving, certainly. People need to slow down. You know, one way to look at it is it's not the vehicle hitting the pedestrian. The driver is the one that's striking the pedestrian. Again, ultimately, who's at fault? Sometimes it's difficult to determine. You know, we always try to encourage every motorist coming through the city, into the city, to drive with due regard. Pay attention. Make sure you have appropriate following distances. You're not on your phone. You're not distracted. You know, and drive carefully and keep alert.
Now, the vehicle code indicates that if we can't stop in time as a driver, it's our fault. Is that kind of how it boils down to with a lot of this stuff?
It depends. You know, obviously, let's say you're following the speed limit, the weather conditions are just fine, visibility is good, because you got to keep in mind the speed limit might be posted 30, but if it's a snowstorm, safe speed's going to be less than 30 miles per hour.
Well, let's say it's a beautiful day like this morning.
Right, good visibility, streets are dry.
No fog, everything's okay.
Right, and you're driving exactly the way you're supposed to when someone literally darts out in front of you and there's nothing you can do. Well, the driver's not going to be at fault typically in that case. But again, if the driver's speeding, if they're on their cell phone, if they don't yield to a pedestrian, let's say, well, they should always yield. The vehicle's always going to win. But let's say a pedestrian steps out into a stop walk. You know, you're supposed to stop. You're supposed to wait. What gets scary is you get some of these three-lane sections, and the first driver may stop appropriately, let the person step out into the street. Someone sees the car stopped in front of them, doesn't even slow down. Yeah, does the juke around and just in time to potentially hit the pedestrian as they're walking in front of the vehicle that followed the law and stopped for them. So, again, that's why you have to be very alert.
Now, are 4th and 5th Street U.S. Highway 101 rules, or are they City of Eureka rules?
Well, our municipal codes would still apply anywhere in the city limits, but, I mean, that is a state highway as well, and the vehicle code is usually the prevailing.
I would think that you wouldn't want to stop, particularly if you've got, you know, a large vehicle behind you loaded with items, like a cement truck, a logging truck, something like that. You know, let the pedestrian stay to the side and not get smacked. I mean, does that make sense? This is a yes or no.
I think you need to rephrase.
You're dragging it
slightly
out
here.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with our black raspberry.
New flavor.
New flavor, new water flavor, yes.
You realize it's the only reason I come once a month.
Well, whatever it takes, man. You know, a little reading, a little literature for you, a little refreshment for you. This is all good stuff. Jeez. With summertime coming on, and we certainly have had a more temperate spring than in wintertime, all these RVs that are all over the place, and we can be nice and say in various states of disrepair, repair. I know you guys did the homeless study a couple years ago, and you had to allow so many per RV and you couldn't knock and all that kind of stuff. Are you able to talk to these people and just, you know, find out, you know, what's going on? Because some of them don't look healthy. I mean, not mechanically healthy. I mean, they just don't look public safety healthy. Public health healthy? Okay. Others are, you know, purchased recently, and they look like a regular RV that somebody either traveling through or is recreating in our area. Okay. Is there anything you guys can do with that, or is that code enforcement?
Like many of these issues, it's multiple departments have responsibility. Code enforcement does have a role and will be, I think, taking a bigger role than in the past. But, you know, another way to look at this, if it's not someone that's just passing through on vacation looking, you know, for a place to roadside rest, what's drawing attention is more the eyesores, the broken down, run down vehicles that are persisting well beyond the 72 hours that the municipal code, you know, potentially allows, depending on where in the city.
I drove waterfront. It was on the backside of Schmidt-Bauer. Holy cow. I mean, it was uncomfortable almost just driving through.
Yeah, I went by Friday, and there was somewhere between 12 and 15 vehicles there, including a trailer with nothing attached to it. It's an immense challenge. There are certain areas in town that they gravitate towards. That's one of them. And many of them belong to homeless individuals, and it's a tricky situation, like homelessness in general.
Are they homeless in that?
Yes.
With that vehicle, that's still...
I think it would be fair to say yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so not ideal living situations. There's not water, power, and sewage hookups, obviously. In many cases, you start to see trash and other issues. You got to worry about any leakage into storm drains and our waterways, obviously, which could expedite removal. It's a big problem. The same way that it's a sensitive situation that you've really got to be mindful of, not only constitutional rights and, compassion, in dealing with the homeless anywhere. At the same time, we're trying to balance that with the need to maintain public health and safety and, you know, public spaces being used for the intended purposes, which is not a campground there. And the problem is it's, you push them out in one location, and ultimately you have to, because you need to get in there and clean up and give some relief for businesses around there and people trying to enjoy the trail or whatever. But then they go someplace else because you haven't solved the causal issues behind why they're there in the first place. So they move, we clear it out. You know, it usually takes weeks for a number of reasons, including staffing and scope of the problem and legal requirements for notices, because we prefer not to have to cite. I mean, if they don't have enough money to fix their car in the first place and you pile some fees on, that's not necessarily helping the situation. But then they go someplace else and it starts all over again. And so it's a chronic challenge, and COVID hasn't made it easier because, we've seen increases in all kinds of issues. But on top of that, we had our volunteer abatement team was pretty much not very active for much of last year due to the health and safety concerns and risks. So we're starting to step up the removal and noticing of these vehicles again. We have to. We get a lot of complaints about it, and there's some legitimate issues, but we're trying to do it in a way that is mindful, again, of the bigger picture of the situations going on.
Now, I know that there's been an awful lot of effort associated with homeless walking, homeless, with mental health and that kind of stuff. Same with these folks. I mean, do you have mental health professionals with you also? Because I noticed that with some of those, and whether it's the ones below Silvercrest or some of the other areas, that spill over or spill out also. I mean, they're sitting on the sidewalks doing all that kind of stuff, but they've got their rig right there. I would think that it's the same profile. Is it?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd use the word profile, but if you are dealing with the homeless, then many of the same challenges are
similar
going to
challenges,
apply.
Similar challenges, characteristics.
Yeah. There may be some nuances.
That's right.
But,
profile is a magic word for you, isn't it? Sorry.
But, there's many shared challenges and issues, certainly. Tricks. It's not always a one-for-one, but...
No, but so in those scenarios, then you travel with a mental health professional at that initial contact?
So, yeah, between our partnership with the county and their programs, our MIST officer, and now the city has the Uplift Eureka program as well, which, by the way, we're trying to integrate more mental health assistance into that program from the city side as well, just to augment the efforts that are already there through the county's programs, not to supplant them. But you know, when we can, our people, our officers get out there, you know, from the CSET team, and when they're engaging with members of the homeless, over 50% at least have severe or at least some mental health issues. We try to bring that component in.
It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bear can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bear Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bear Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, Baywood Golf and Country Club, Humboldt Bay Bistro, and Randall's Sand and Gravel. Steve, looking at some of the processes that the legal system has, you mentioned, you know, to cite somebody if they don't have money, they're not going to pay it. Yeah, okay. But there's a record. Not that it's going to change anything, but there's a documentation of whatever the situation is. I would think that that would be beneficial long-term over whatever the horizon is, either for your records of what kind of things are my troops having to do or being having to deal with, as well as for individuals that are maybe chronically in violation. Even if, you know, there's really nothing that they can do about it, at least there's then a history for somebody to review. Am I missing something there?
Well, anytime you make a decision to enforce, whether it's a citation, which is functionally, well, these days now an infraction, but can be a misdemeanor.
Right.
Or make a custodial arrest, you're always weighing, you know, what the need is, you know, what's the outcome we're shooting for here? What are we trying to solve? And you do get certain recalcitrant habitual offenders that all attempts to gain their voluntary cooperation don't work. They keep coming back to the same issue. Maybe they're seriously impacting a business, you know, or trespassing or causing damage or something. You know, why you run out of tools. I mean, the only thing you've got left might be some form of enforcement, and that's where that comes in. Or if the very first offense is serious enough, you know, that's another consideration. But we certainly don't want to get into the cycle of citing just to cite, just to document, because there's the other side of that. Once it's issued, that's got to be processed, you know, either the city attorney's office, the district attorney's office. That takes time, that takes resources, you know, that are limited, and that's another factor that has to go in there.
Do the troops have, like, journals or something so that you know?
Well, that our computer-aided dispatch system can track everything.
So there is something that's there.
At least to say, yes, this person has been warned, removed, you know, so we can do it that way.
38 times.
Right. Now, there are times where, you know, as you stack up citations, they can all sometimes be combined or come together in a single outcome where, especially if you have it elevated to a misdemeanor, which we probably won't be able to do under our current version of our camping ordinance, but there's other municipal codes. Sometimes a judge can issue a stay away order from an area that prohibits that individual from coming back to, let's say, a certain section of Old Town, because they may have racked up a dozen, two dozen, you know, infractions or problems. I mean, they're a serious problem down there, and it gives us a new tool to, right, and that would be one of the advantages. Sometimes it's really not about money, you know,
it's not the financial, it's just the documentation process.
The documentation, but also what other hooks or consequences can be made part of that to ultimately compel behavior that you really need to have, because it's a public safety in order issue. And so we try to be very careful not to abuse that and to look at the bigger picture, because a lot of what, for instance, our CSET team, Community Safety Engagement team, is doing is based on relationships that they're trying to build.
Yeah, you don't want to to kneecap yourself. I mean, it'd be
You'd rather see that person ultimately accept help and get in the process of learning job skills, getting their license, getting their birth certificate, going to their substance abuse treatment program or mental health services or
getting
whatever.
Getting it together.
Right, and getting upstream of the problem, that route is usually much more desirable than the other way. But again, we're dealing, unfortunately, often with people that just they're so deep in the throes of substance, abuse and addiction or mental health issues with inadequate resources locally, often that it's just very, very challenging, or they may not be in the state of mind to be thinking logically and making some of these decisions. And that's that really makes this an exceedingly challenging problem.
Yeah, it's interesting that the and I don't know if it's an irony or just a dichotomy that we've got so many folks without jobs, and we've got so many folks looking for people to employ. And it really seems like these are two different populations, as a lot of this population we're talking about, as they currently are, they're not employable.
Right. Well, here's the uncomfortable reality is sometimes when people think of the homeless, and certainly there are members of the homeless that this is true of, but they're down on the luck. They just lost their job. They're in a tough spot right now on the streets, want to do everything they can to get off and just need a hand up. They some assistance, something to get them over the hump. But they're willing ultimately at the end of the day and able to accept that help and to do their part and get there. And everyone wants to help those people, obviously, too. But that is not the majority of our homeless. And I
20%?
No.
30%? 10%? 5%?
I think it's probably less than 5. And okay. I don't have hard data on that, and forgive me if I'm wrong. But,
no, but your experience.
But our our people, that's not most. There are some, and that cycles and that changes. So many others, again, are just have these other complex issues going on with mental health, crises, and again, drug and alcohol, abuse and other huge challenges. And we do have a certain percentage, 100% for sure, in our city that they just willfully choose not to engage, that this is the life they want to live. They tell us that. And they want to live, free. They want to live where they want. They don't want to follow anyone else's rules.
So why do they then lean into those that are working and those that do have businesses and those that do live in Eureka? Why are they engaging with those folks if this is the lifestyle they want and they want to be it seems like the goals of one aren't necessarily one lifestyle isn't necessarily being manifest by their actions when they are out being free doing what they want. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the connection you're making between the businesses in that particular group, and I don't have numbers. Like
just a statement to be free and I be on my own, and yet these are the people that a lot of us are having negative impacts from.
Right, and that's the group, whatever percentage that it is. It does ebb and flow, and people are unique. Sometimes they'll change. But that's a group that often it takes a more enforcement-focused approach at times because their unwillingness to participate. The challenging part, and we all have a big heart for them, are those that's more, they're just not able because of where they're at to participate on. It's not as simple as some people might think. Oh, go get a job. They can't. So what do we do?
Right. The challenge in their mental situation.
Or they can't right now. They need more support to get there. So what do we do with them?
Got an answer?
Not an easy one, but at the same time, we have to look to the safety of the whole community, too, and that's
the challenge. Act, yes. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Steve, we heard the news last day or so, that the state is looking to reduce its prison population by pushing more to the locals, or just turning them loose. That couldn't have been a good press release that you got when that thing came out.
Yeah, that is not good news for our community, unless someone can show
any
data differently. That just seems dangerous in a continuation. Apparently, there's only about 90,000 people in the state prison system right now, at least according to some information I had got from the sheriff yesterday. About half it was when AB 109 was implemented back, in 2010, 2011. And so this is supposedly a continued effort to reduce our prison population. But at some point, you have to ask, at what cost to our communities? And I'm very concerned in this case that this now applies not only to what they previously called nonviolent, which, by the way, the way that they made those decisions, completely misleading to the public. Yeah. That might be based on the last offensive commitment, not their entire criminal history, as I understood it, but now violent inmates. And that's not to say, can there be some kind of system where someone legitimately, genuinely, you can prove it, they've proven it, have changed their life, they're rehabilitated, no longer a danger to society. Can there be a pathway for more of those? Yeah, I think most people could support and understand that, but that's not typically the way our state tends to run things. It's overreaction, it's lack of balance, it's a broad brush, and you have to be concerned about those that are getting out early, that really they need to be in prison because they are going to victimize people, they're predators, when they get back out. And so, you know, when you make these wholesale decisions like this, you know that in with, let's say, some that will go about and be contributing members of society, and this is a good thing for California, there's going to be many that this is going to be a bad thing because they are bad people and they do bad things to others, and we rue the consequences in our communities. Maybe not in the governor's mansion, but, you know, you're going to see it in the streets.
Maybe the senator's mansion. This predator population, is there a definition of those folks? I mean, I know the state prisons are for the bad guys and gals to start with, but with mental health facilities, regional health care, whatever you want to call them, not available, and with this stuff being kicked out, counties don't have the capabilities nor the funding for this.
Yeah, I don't know what the mental health status would be of some of these inmates and how that factors in. Obviously, with sexually violent predators, like the Joshua Cooley case, it got quite a few waves and is still an ongoing saga.
Right.
Here, there are definitions for that, and that certainly exposed the massive gaps in the mental health system and the placement system for that, because no one wants an individual like that anywhere near their neighborhood, obviously. You know, because to get to that status, I mean,
you've earned that
right
title.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, there are certain individuals that tend to be recidivist their entire lives. You know, you almost can't rehabilitate. And that's, I think, somewhat implied in the definition.
Almost a genetic
right.
weakness. Yeah. So try to leave this on an upbeat. What would you like us out in the community to do about that kind of situation, about the RVs, about everything in between? Is there anything, any rules of thumb that we should be doing? Because I figure you guys know about this stuff already.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the understanding, which, I tend to see from many people today, I think they get how much our hands are tied, and it's frustrating because they want action now, naturally, just like I would. You know, and being told that these we can do something, but it might take years, doesn't help the way people feel today.
No.
But some understanding of the challenge we're against, become knowledgeable about the law. Pay attention when these bills and these measures come out that you get an opportunity to vote on. They're often misleading, starting with their titles. And so dig deeper and look at what's the actual physical impacts going to be for me and my family and my business before you vote.
So pay attention to political activity. Thank you very much, sir. See everybody tomorrow.